He pays us a visit and blesses us in our soul and gives us the courage and strength to move forward. And tonight, the few thoughts that he gave to me has been an encouragement to me, and that's my desire, is to encourage you tonight. Unsung heroes. The other day, I don't know, maybe two Sundays ago, Jennifer and Julie got up and sang a song that was written by Johnny Erickson Tata, and the music was by Sister Myra Moaning. And in that song, they were singing about use what you have in your hand, and there was a man named Shamgar in the song. And it said Shamgar had his ox gourd. And afterwards, later on, Jennifer said to me, "Do you know who Shamgar was?" I said, "No, I really don't." So we looked him up in the Bible. Do you know who Shamgar is? Anyone? Do you know who that man was? Well, he only has one verse in the Bible, and it's in Judges. If you turn to Judges, the third chapter, in the very last verse, 31, Judges 3 and 31, it says, "And after him," speaking about another mighty man, Ehud, another judge, it says, "And after him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel." And that's all we know about him. But this man took a tool, which was a bow about 10 feet long, and on the end of it is a sharp dagger thing that's used to poke the oxen and keep them in line when you're out in the field plowing. And he took that long pole, and the Philistines came upon him, and no doubt they were causing trouble there for the Israelites. And this man, with that ox goad, killed 600 Philistines by himself. And this is all we know about him. But that was hard work. It's somewhat equivalent to what Samson did when he took the jawbone of an ass and killed 1,000 men at that time. But this man is very unknown. But yet he did something that was, at that particular time, mighty. And it was probably to spare and save others of his family, of his people. And the Lord used him. But we don't know very much about him. And you know, when you read in the Word of God, different places, it'll have a list of mighty men. It'll have a list of people who did great works of their time, and they're just a name. They're just a little space there in the Word of God. But yet, of their time, they lived a life just like you and me, of sweat and toil. They had to persevere against obstacles. They had to have patience. They had to have faith in God. They lived an everyday life like we do. And yet, their life may not be noticed by a lot of people. They might just have one little line in the Word of God about them. But yet, they did something that was honorable in the sight of God. They kept the faith. They did something that helped others to press on. So we want to acknowledge a few of those tonight by the help of the Lord and who they were. And some of them don't even have names. They're not even mentioned in the Bible by a name. David had a lot of mighty men that helped him. Whenever he was anointed king and he set into place those of the Levites to work in the temple of God, we have a long list of the men in 1 Chronicles 23. It gives a long list of the men that helped him. These were men that waited upon the house of the Lord. They did service to God. In their time, they were honorable. They would take the sacrifices from the people and sacrifice them unto God for the sins of the people. From 1 Chronicles 23 unto about 26, it's just a lot of names What a list of names of the men of God that the Lord used in the time of David when he set the house in order and all. And at that time, those men that worked for the Lord had valuable positions. They had a place of honor, and the Lord used them. But now their time, their era is gone. It's past. It's way past history. But the Lord is looking for men and women just like that today. Men and women of God, He will keep their place. He will serve God faithfully. He will hold to their integrity before God and do their duty in this time, in this day and age that we live in. They too had their battles. They may have been somewhat different in the environment they were in and the time of life, but yet every human being still has to deal with the enemy that brings doubts, discouragement, brings temptations of doing evil, and they had to deal with that too. But the Lord helped them and gave them strength. We don't know the details of all these men, of their lives, but I'm sure among them there were many of them very honorable that did their part to do what they could to please God and to serve for the people and the place where they were put. So we find many, many in their positions in the past that have been faithful and true. And we have record of some, like I said, that does not even have a name in the Bible. In 2 Kings, we have a story, and we've heard of this story before, but there was a real bad siege of the Syrians against the children of Israel. 2 Kings 7. And the people were locked up in Jerusalem. It was a bad famine in Samaria. And the king of Syria had come against them. And these people were so, they could not get out of the city there because the enemy was camped all around about them. And they did not have food to eat. And it got so bad that if you read in the 6th chapter, in the last part, 26th verse, that they were beginning to be cannibals, the people of Samaria. They were pressed on every side by the enemy. They could not get out to get food. And it was a grief to the king. And Elisha had told them that this was happening because they had not been true to God. And Elisha then told them, the king sent a messenger to Elisha. This is in 2 Kings, the 6th chapter. I'm just telling the story here. The king sent a messenger to Elisha to ask him, "You talk to God about this. We want deliverance. We want help." And Elisha said to the men there, he said, Don't take me, but I'm going to tell you what God's told me, that there's going to be a break in this famine. And tomorrow at this time, we will have food to eat. There will be plenty. And the man that heard it, the one porter that was sitting there, he said, "Oh, I don't believe that." In the 7th chapter of 2 Kings, the 2nd verse, it said, "Then a Lord on whose hand the king leaned answered the man of God and said, 'Behold, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, might this thing be?' And he said, 'Behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but shalt not eat it thereof.'" That's what Elisha answered to this man. Well, there were four lepers, and they were there in that city of Samaria, and they said to themselves, "You know, we're not doing well. We're going to die soon. If we go into town and among the people, we're unclean and they will kill us. So why don't we risk it and go check out the camp of the Syrians and see what's there?" And so they went to the camp, and lo and behold, they were shocked. The camp was empty. It was like the Syrians had left in immediate haste. And they found there that the food, the animals, the tents, the clothing, all were left in place. So the lepers, they rose in the twilight, and they were there, and they saw that this, they went from tent to tent. In the 7th verse, they rose and fled in the twilight. Well, this is talking about the Syrians, because they thought the Lord had caused them to hear a sound of chariots coming. And they thought the Israelites had hired the Egyptians and another group of soldiers against them. Was it the Hittites? Anyway, had hired some troops against them and that they had come to do battle for the ones in Samaria. And so they had fled, the Syrians had, thinking that the enemy was coming against them. And they had left the tents. And so the lepers, they found it this way. And they said, well, let's go share this news with the ones in the city that's all locked up, because there's food here for them. And they came to the city, and they called to the porters, and they told it to the king's house therein. And the king arose in the night and said unto his servants, I will now shew you what the Syrians have done to us. They know that we be hungry. Therefore are they gone out of the camp to hide themselves in the field, saying, when they come out of the city, we shall catch them alive and get into the city. And one of his servants answered and said, let's take some, I pray thee, five of the horses that remain, which are left in the city. Behold, there is all the multitude of Israel that are left in it. Behold, I say, they are even as all the multitude of the Israelites that are consumed. And let us send and see. They took therefore two chariot horses, and the king sent after the host of the Syrians, saying, go and see. And they went after them into Jordan, and lo, all the way was full of garments and vessels, which the Syrians had cast away in their haste. And the messengers returned and told it to the king. And the people went out and spoiled the tents of the Syrians. So a measure of fine flour was sold for a shekel, and two measures of barley for a shekel, according to the word of the Lord. So it was, as Elisha had said, that it was a break in the famine. The Lord had caused the people to spoil the Syrians and take of their goods. The porter, who had said he didn't believe it, he was sitting by the gate, and as the people rushed out, he was trampled. He saw it taking place, but he died because of the press of the people. So it was what had been prophesied about him came to pass. But you know, these four lepers, they could have just kept it to themselves. They could have just said, well, we've been mistreated. We're afflicted, and they don't want us in the camp, and we can, you know, in town, and we can just go ahead and keep this secret, and we don't have to really tell. But, you know, these four lepers still had compassion on the people in the city. They went and told what they had seen. They brought the good news. There's food. There's something out here available. You can come and have what you want. And the Lord was pleased with that. These are unsung heroes. They shared the good news. They did not keep it to themselves, but they let others know about it. In Ecclesiastes 9 and 13, it talks about how it is better a wise man. Let's find that. In Ecclesiastes 9 and 13, it says, this wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed good, great to me. There was a little city and a few men within it, and there came a great king against it and besieged it and built great bulwarks against it. Now there was found in it a poor, wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no man remembered that same poor man. A poor, wise man, he had wisdom. He had a way of helping this city to be saved, but nobody remembered his name. It's not even recorded. But yet of that time he did something honorable. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of wise men are heard in quiet, more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. Now wisdom is better than weapons of war. Wisdom. Wisdom, according to the scripture, what is the beginning of wisdom? The fear of God. Wisdom comes from God. True wisdom comes from the fear of God. Acknowledging God first, acknowledging God's ways and his laws. And so no doubt this poor man, though he was poor in earthly possessions, he had some wealth, God-wise. He had some wisdom, and we don't know the particulars of this story, but no doubt there was a way he had of being a messenger, of being a interpreter, and somehow helping this city to be saved through wisdom of words. Much better than taking up weapons of war. Wise, a man with wisdom, is better than weapons of war. Ecclesiastics also says, or rather maybe it's Proverbs, though it was both written by Solomon, in Proverbs 16 and 32, it says, a man that is able to rule his spirit, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. That goes along with the wisdom of God. Someone that is wise in the ways of the Lord, James, the third chapter says, wisdom that is from above is first pure and then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of good fruits, without hypocrisy, without partiality. Wisdom from above, the wisdom that God gives, it will cause a man to be strong, strong in the things of the Lord, mighty, mighty in the Lord. It may not be someone that everybody knows, but it's someone God knows. And that counts more than being famous, having your name in some great book of some sort. To have God know you and to know God is the greatest of all. And so it is, this wise man here, he had something from God where he was able to save this city. He must have had, perhaps, the wisdom that caused him to be slow to anger. We don't know. We can just assume. But we know he had something. We turn to Proverbs, the very last chapter, Proverbs 31. We don't know this mother's name, but she said this to her son, Lemuel. She told him, what is a good woman? And this proverb has been, for many years, a guideline to women, how to guide the home. But we don't even know the name of the mother. It just says, she taught this to her son. She said, my son, this is what I want you to do when you look for a wife. Look for one who knows how to guide the house wisely. And she was a good mother. She taught her son something. We don't know her name, but we do know that she had some wisdom that she gave to her son. And that wisdom that she imparted to him, and that's been passed down to us through the scriptures, has been a guideline to us and a blessing to us through the years. Someone without a name known to us, but someone who made a difference in her time to her son and to the ones following behind. Do you know who Joseph of Arimathea was? I think I said that name right. It's the name of a town. Who was Joseph? If you turn to Matthew, yes, right. If you turn to Matthew, the 27th chapter, Joseph had a very important place. And yet we rarely hear about this Joseph. We hear of the Joseph of the Old Testament, who was with a coat of many colors, sold into slavery by his brothers. We hear of Joseph, who was the foster father of Jesus, the earthly father of Jesus. But this Joseph right here had a very important position too. At the last, when Jesus had been crucified and his body was there hanging on the cross and it was crushed and bleeding, you know, his disciples, Jesus' disciples, had left him because of fear that they would be next. This man, Joseph, had a lot of courage. He had a lot of courage in that he was willing to go to Pilate at the evening time. In the 57th verse, it's Matthew 27 and 57, he came and begged for the body of Jesus, and Pilate gave it to him. Joseph took that body, and he wrapped it in clean linen. And no doubt he cried over Jesus. And also Nicodemus came with him, and then the women, Mary, Jesus' mother, and they helped put spices around the body, as the custom was. But that took a lot of courage for Joseph to do that, because he was part of the Sanhedrin. He was not only telling the Sanhedrin, I disagreed with what you did. He's also saying, I give my life. I know that at this time Jesus was crucified because the people turned against him. I could be in jeopardy here, but I'm willing to be in jeopardy to let my reputation be cast aside and to be known as part of the despised, to take that body down. No doubt the Roman soldiers, when he came to get that, if you can picture how it may have been, they probably sneered at him. They probably made some comments. But he didn't let that bother him. He took that body of Jesus and he wrapped it carefully. And he put it in his tomb carefully. He had a love there and a care. That was saying something. He didn't have to say a lot with words. He did it with his actions. An unsung hero. We don't hear him mentioned much, but he was an honorable man for doing that. Perhaps he had even stood against what the Sanhedrin was doing when they brought Jesus in and had talked about him in a negative way. But his voice probably wasn't heard because of the others being so negative. Whatever the case, we know that at this particular time he stood for Christ and he helped in this particular situation in a very mighty way. God was honored with that, was pleased with that. The Lord is looking for Josephs today. People that are willing to say, I'll stay with the despised few. I'll stay with those that the world has rejected. In Acts 23, there's a time in Paul's life whenever he was taken into the castle. And again, his life was in jeopardy because they were fighting over what he had told them about Jesus. He had witnessed to them. And so in Acts 23, 40-some men banded together. And they said, we're not going to eat or drink until we know that Saul, or Paul, his name was changed, has been killed. We will not do anything until we know he's been killed. Just a moment. Let me find it here. And so it was, while Paul was there in the prison, cast away, his young nephew heard this, his sister's son. The nephew heard what these 40 men were planning. And so he came to Paul in the night. He had courage. He could have said, oh, my uncle's in prison, and I don't want to be in jeopardy here. They could take me. They could arrest me for being in contact with my uncle. He's caused disturbance. But instead, this young man, and we don't even know his name, he came and he told Pa. He said, there's 40 men that have made a vow, and they're wanting you dead. They're going to have you killed. And Pa told him, he said, you go and tell the centurion what's going on. And so the nephew did. He went and 19th verse, this is Acts 23 and 19. Then the chief captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked him, what is it that thou hast to tell me? And he said, the Jews have agreed to desire thee that thou wouldest bring down Paul tomorrow into the council, as though they would inquire somewhat of him more perfectly. But do not thou yield unto them, for there lie in wait for him of them more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath, that they would neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now are they ready, looking for a promise from thee. So the chief captain then let the young man depart, and charged him, see thou tell no man that thou hast showed me these things to me. And he called unto him two centurions, saying, make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, and spearmen 200 at the third hour of the night, and provide them with beasts, that they may set Paul on and bring him safe unto Phoenix, the governor. And he wrote a letter after this manner. Anyway, he sent Paul on to safety. He spared Paul's life. And I've sometimes wondered if those 40 men, what they did, if they were true to their oath and continued to fast on. They did not get Paul. They had to somehow break their oath or die, because Paul was spared from their hands. But it was because of a young man. He was willing to stand up and take his life into jeopardy to go and speak to his uncle about this, because as the story told before, Paul was being persecuted. He was not very popular. There's a time or two when Paul said, "I stood alone. Nobody stood with me," whenever he would testify about the Lord. And when we think about it, in those times, he was a human being like the rest of us, and that hurt. No doubt he felt very alone, Paul did. But the Lord was with him. For this nephew to be so bold to come and tell him this news meant that his nephew had a care about his uncle, and he also had a fear of God. He had a respect to what his uncle was doing, to the Lord, and to what the new news was. There was such a change in their time. It's hard for us to fathom how different this was to those people of that time. But when they began to tell the gospel about Jesus, it was a total turnover from what they were used to. And then when the Gentiles began to eat with the Jews, Peter and Paul had a difference on that for a while. It was such a change and a turnover that it's hard for us to fathom how much different it made those people have to change in their life and in their thinking. And it was really only by God's help and by his revealing to those people that became Christian what God was doing and what he had in mind. They had to have some courage. They had to have some boldness. And we know how Rome turned against them, and persecution began so severely against Christians. We've heard the stories of the catacombs, how the people had to hide there, down in the caves of the catacombs, so that they would not be killed. It was not a pleasant life. They had to stay in darkness most of the time, and at night they would send up someone to go and get food for them from some person, a Roman citizen that had compassion on them, and send food back. That was hard times. If you turn to Hebrews, the 11th chapter, we hear or read here of a lot of heroes. There's names to some, but when you come to the very back or very last part of the chapter, it says, maybe the 33rd verse, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskin and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. And this is talking some of the faithful of the Old Testament, but this went on to be a continuance of Christians in the New. Whenever the Christians were persecuted for righteousness' sake, when they stood for Christ and would not bow to the Roman gods, there was a lot of cruel mockings there. Those people had to have something within to give them that strength. And we can read about them and stand in awe. That same strength is for us today too. And when we stand against the temptations of the world that's around about us, the evil that we see, the defiance against God's moral laws, the defiance people have even among themselves to one another, we see that and we abstain from that. We live a pure life. We keep our mind fixed upon heavenly things. We don't let it take away from our purity. The Lord is pleased with that. And we're in the same list here of these who were faithful. Unsung heroes. People who have no name may be written in the scriptures or not known by others, but yet God knows them. God knows us. He knows us. He knows when we're faithful to him, and it pleases him. He wants us to be true to him. And someday, I like to think about when we stand before the Lord, or actually bow before him, and all those mighty people, many people, of all nations, how will that be to be a part of that? And no, we're there with those who are mighty in faith, those who went through severe persecution, were tortured and tormented, and yet they stood firm. Those who had to hide, and those who saw their families torn apart, and yet they stood firm. To be counted with them, Lord, help us to be faithful in the trials that we face in life, in the tests that we have. Let us be faithful and true, because it will mean so much when we hear the Lord say, "Well done," through the trials that we have, through the tests that we face, to be faithful and to know that God is pleased. There's power and there's strength from Him to help us to be counted in that great cloud of witnesses that it speaks about there in the next chapter. We have a great cloud before us that's gone on, who set a pace, who showed us you can be true no matter what. I've been one that's always been interested in reading about those that have been persecuted. You can't read it too long, and I would read it at night and then pray and go to sleep. If I read it in the morning, stories about people that were persecuted, it would stay with me through the day. But it stays on your mind. But when you think about it at night, and it gives you that courage to know that they had faith and they had trueness. I met a woman through a group, and I heard her testify. She was a Russian, and she had gone through some severe persecution. Her face, she had makeup on, but when you got close to her, you saw why, because her face was pitted, and she had had cigarette burns on her face. And her story was very, very touching. And I got to talk with her for a while, personally. And there's been others too, but this one particular lady, she had a glow in her eyes that you could tell she had something there. When you looked at her in other ways, you might have wondered, but her glow in her eyes told you she had something there that kept her, that sustained her. She had been in prison, I forget how many years, but she had had some really severe, terrible things happen to her. Her family had been taken. There's still people today being persecuted for righteousness' sake. I just read a story of a man that he was a Christian, and when it was found out in Saudi Arabia, they put him on a cross, and he lost his life there. But he was known to be a Christian, and it made him mad. You know, we have freedom in our country to worship God, but we can see the evil around about us, and we know that there's people there out in our society today that don't have any respect toward Christians. Lord, help us while we have an opportunity right now, while we have a window of time, to not be ashamed to tell the gospel or to pass out tracts or to live modest among them. Just sometimes being modest among them shines a light there. May not even have to be words, just our life. Lord, help us to be what we should be during this time when we have a window of opportunity without persecution, to be able to reach out and tell others, yes, there's a God that can keep you. There's a God that can help you through your trials. He has the strength, and you don't have to bow to the evils of this world. You can stand true. You can be faithful to God, even in the midst of wickedness in our world today. You can be true, and the Lord has the strength. I guess in closing, the first verse there of Hebrews 12, seeing that we are compressed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. The joy that was set before him. I have joy circled in my Bible because that is a change, a paradox of thinking that a cross is a joy. To have a cross, to think of it as joy. But Jesus saw it, and he knew when he was going to the cross there was going to be physical pain, that he knew the joy that his faithfulness was going to bring to other people. Lord, help us to be able to stand firm when trials come, tests come, that we will be true to the Lord. It's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to do it, to live it. And I appreciate the people of God. I appreciate the examples that I've seen. I appreciate the faithfulness, the testimonies. I appreciate them. I know the Lord has strength for each one of us, and I know he's helped each one of you in many times of temptation, many times of trial, and there's strength when we're together. But Lord, help us when we have to stand alone. Let's be able to stand too. Let's be able to stand and say, yes, Lord, though all the world despise you and all the others forsake me, yet, Lord, I want to be true to you. I want to be faithful to you. I want to stand firm for you. I want to do what you want me to do, whatever the cost. So the Lord has the grace. He has the strength for us. Let's continue on to be faithful.